Welcome again to the Big Picture Social Emotional Learning Podcast. Even though this upcoming conversation in defense of SEL is one I would never have predicted needing to be shared. But, and you don't need me to tell you this, these are wild times in which just about any topic, especially around education, can ignite extreme and heated reactions. And so I reached out again to Elizabeth Peterson, a teacher with many years' experience, who lights up with an energetic joy and appreciation for what she accomplishes alongside her elementary and middle school students, year after year, by incorporating SEL into the curriculum of all the subjects she teaches, from math to science to English. We all have a lot to learn from Elizabeth, so listen all the way through this conversation. There are gems of insight from start to finish. Welcome again to the Big Picture Social Emotional Learning Podcast. I am your host, Nene White. Good. So welcome, Elizabeth Peterson. Thank you again for sharing conversation about this very important topic that we both care about enormously.
Yes. Thank you, Nene. I'm so glad to have another conversation with you about all of this.
Yeah. And this is is really important to both of us, but especially to you, because you are in the schools and in the classroom every day. And we are talking about some misunderstandings that have come up about what SEL is and what it is not.
Yes.
So where to start? I think, do you want to start with what's most troubling about the misunderstanding, or do you want to start with what you know to be valuable through your own direct experience? I'll give you the choice of where to start.
Yeah, well, you know what? I think it's always good to start with the why. Like, why is the idea of social emotional learning such an important thing? And why is it necessary for being in schools and inside classrooms? And I truly believe that the skills are foundational. You know, I always go back to like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? Right at the foundation of his pyramid, there's the physiological needs that students have, that all of us have, really. Food, water, shelter. And we know that some of our students are not coming to school with those.
Yeah.
And schools, especially public schools, provide some of that for our students. Then there's security. And there's social needs that people have, and our kids are no different than that, right? So they need to feel safe. They need to feel accepted. They need to feel a sense of belonging. And all of these needs are foundational before they can get to those higher levels of thinking. You know, because it's almost like once you go to the top of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, then you can start talking about Bloom's taxonomy. Then you can start talk about, you know, how students can think and learn and, you know, have that self-esteem. But where we have social emotional skills and developing those skills can actually help us in schools so that students can get to a place where they can start to learn. It's something that I think has really been happening all along throughout of history of education, right? Whether it was, you know, hundreds of years ago where we're talking about understanding moral values like integrity and work ethic, or if it's, you know, when I was in college, we were learning about character education and how to teach students skills like respect and responsibility. I loved the idea of that, because I wanted to get into the classroom and help my students just become better people through their learning. And
but
so
I'm going to play the devil's advocate here. Isn't that the parents' job? Isn't that the family's job?
Well, in cases of things like respect, responsibility, I think that's the whole village's job. And when you have students,
again?
The whole village's job. Yes. And when you have students in a classroom, what better place to help them develop skills like, you know, being socially aware and, you know, being able to work with others and accepting people for their individuality. We have such a great opportunity to help them to understand some of those things and develop themselves as individuals so that they can go out into the world and be contributors to society.
But how do we know? And I guess I find myself in this conversation, maybe it would be helpful if I do play the devil's advocate. How do we know that you're not, as a teacher, just indoctrinating my child according to your values? How do I know that you're not doing that?
Yeah, well, I do believe, I do believe there are some universal values that we can pretty much all agree on. We can also take the stance of utilizing social emotional skill development to get students to a place where they can learn. I'm big on helping students to transition into the classroom, feel safe so that they can take risks, make mistakes, and focus on their learning and learn. Now, this may come as a little bit of surprise to some people, but I actually do sympathize with some of these parents' concerns. Because in some cases, schools, and in some cases, individual teachers are stepping over boundaries.
Okay.
And they're talking about things that just might not be appropriate in the school setting. And it may be such some aspects of, you know, CRT, gender ideologies, for example. And what's happening is the umbrella of social emotional learning is becoming so big that it's encompassing things that I don't believe really belong there when it comes to the classroom.
Right. And this is called the Big Picture Social Emotional Learning Podcast because SEL is big. I mean, it's basically all human interactions and self maintenance as well.
Yes.
But where do we go from objectively universal values? And how do we discern between subjectives? This is important to some people, but it doesn't really apply to all people and all universal values. How do we make that discrimination?
Yeah, well, I think one thing to think about is that the umbrella of social emotional learning, and this is inside the Castle's website, you know, it's not just the classroom or the school, but it's the community and the family. And so students need to be getting their social emotional skills from all of those components. And so in schools, our focus should be on helping students, like I've said, to transition into the classroom, to focus on their learning. And where teachers are truly focusing on the social emotional aspects that pertain to student learning, like perseverance, working together, because that's when we're going to see students really thrive in schools. But on the flip side, you know, there are many parents and organizations who are making these blanket statements about SEL overall, it just plain old doesn't belong in schools, which is also very unproductive. And that's why part of my passion in this field of teaching and SEL is that we really educate all parties on what's at the core of these social emotional skills.
Yes.
And I think what that is in the classroom setting is meant to help students feel accepted and safe. We need to make sure that we're allowing our students to feel heard, to feel at ease to learn, to be able to be in an atmosphere where they feel comfortable taking risks, making mistakes as they're learning, and certainly to work with others. And so SEL, I think, needs to focus on the skills that help students really just be better contributors of society, and we can't ignore that need.
Okay, that is so beautiful, those different elements that are so classroom relevant.
Yes.
And so to make sure that our listeners, especially the people who might be resisting SEL or the people who might know somebody who's resisting, and the listeners can help those people just look at it from this perspective. So I want you, if you can, to go through each one of those. Why parents can help with those, but they can't really implement them because their parents are in a different setting.
Yes.
And why this is so important to happen in the classroom, because these are classroom relevant skills that
yes.
will be carried into real life. So you talked about, can you go through, like, there were three or four of those that are just classroom relevant. I want to highlight those.
Yeah, because the SEL I'm talking about
yes.
is the type that we can use and teach within the context of the curriculum. And the content that teachers are responsible to teach. So having students, having strategies that will help students access the curriculum, like,
and enjoy self-awareness. It and see the relevance of it for themselves. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. So, like, for self-awareness and self-management skills, giving students some calm down strategies and focus strategies, right? Things that will help them work with others. Relationship building is huge. Being able to create things together and share ideas together. One of my favorite activities to do with my students, and then it always turns out to be one of theirs too, is, you know, listening to music together and giving them the opportunity to share their opinions about the interpretation of the music. And then we tie it to the curriculum. We write stories from that. We talk about the language we can use to describe it, how we can interpret. And we also talk about the social awareness aspects of this, because when you're sitting in a group listening to music together, how I hear and interpret something is completely different than how the person next to me hears, because we all bring different experiences. And what a beautiful and safe way to talk about how we are so unique and we can still bring some good things to a conversation. And you know, a lot of the work I do with SEL is, you know, through creativity in the arts and, you know, giving students the opportunity to take risks and make mistakes. I know that's something I repeat all the time. I've probably said a bunch of times already.
Yes.
Because I believe bringing students, you know, through the creative process is an amazing way for them to experience that type of growth that they can't, we provide them in our classroom a safe place to go through that creative process and struggle. A buzzword right now is productive struggle, because students are having a hard time with that. What an amazing place to be able to do that through their creative process, where they can, you know, try things out, fail a couple times, try something different, talk to a neighbor, and experience that type of growth. And this can be respectfully done in the classroom. It's not overstepping any bounds, I don't think, at all, because what it's doing is it's really just helping students be better learners and better people.
Without feeling like they're just having to be empty receptacles of the curriculum that you're trying to implement. It almost feels like real life instead of just being in a class. You know?
Yeah.
You know, real life, which I mean by living the learning instead
yes.
of just absorbing it. They're living it and integrating it without, in the most natural way. You're creating these opportunities. Yeah. And that's the most effective kind of learning, because it's 100%. Firing up all these channels of the brain and the neurons and everything. And they don't, oh, wait, I learned something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, as an arts integration specialist,
yes.
I really appreciate the power of integrated learning.
Yeah.
And a lot of SEL programs are approaching these skills like empathy and kindness and growth mindset. Yeah, they're in isolation. And sometimes through a sequence of like scripted lessons, and that learning just, you know, doesn't have its place in the classroom. The thing is like, that's like when a kid wants to learn how to ride a bike, the adult puts him in front of a YouTube video. When
right.
what the kid really needs is the experience of actually riding the bike. And the key you know, you said opportunity, the experience, and giving students those experiences of developing and practicing the skills in the classroom is the like a wonderful play to do just that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because everybody's in the same boat in those opportunities that you're giving them.
Yeah. So
everybody's having the opportunity to mess up and see, oh, you know, and learn with each other. And then that's the collaboration, which this world needs so much more collaboration. Let's build that into kids' functioning style to that things work better when we learn and make mistakes and discover together.
Thank you.
I love this as much as you do, but you're in the classroom now. So I just love conversations with you. All right. Was there another skill that you wanted to bring out?
What else did we talk about?
Yeah.
The growth mindset, the working together. And also, you know, understanding yourself, I think, is important. You know, I love going through some of these creative activities and lessons with students, or even just regular curriculum activities, and then allowing students to reflect on what did they learn about themselves as a learner. You know, I remember when I was experimenting with different arts integrated lessons that would kind of focus on some of these skills, I remember doing a creative project with paint and just making simple marks on paper. And this one kid got so invested in just mixing paint that he never put something on the paper. He was just so fascinated with the mixing of the paint. And then there were other kids who were so extremely prolific, you know, they just kept, you know, whipping out paper after paper after paper and just making marks and marks and marks and marks. And it was so interesting to see and have them kind of reflect on, you know, you were all given the same materials, you were all given the same assignment, and you were all given the same amount of time. What did you learn about yourself? You know, and it got right down to certain things like, oh, I can get caught up in something, you know, or I just want to get it done. And when you told me we still needed to work, I just decided, okay, I'll just make more, you know, while others would, you know, finish something, quote unquote, finish something. And then I would say, but our time's not up and I want you to keep working. And that would be all I'd say. And other students would then go back and just like add to and improve and just keep working on the same thing. So it was so wonderful to see, to give them that like freedom, that space to kind of try things out, and then reflect on it and understand what that means for them. Because then we can build on that and help them to understand, like, what are the resources that you need? Like, if you get stuck in mixing paint for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
What's something you could ask for, you know, or what is something that you might do for yourself? Like maybe you set yourself a timer, or maybe, you know, you ask for a friend to say, hey, if time's kind of calming down, would you help me out a little bit? You know, you know, so I think those experiences are so, so valuable to the individual students.
Yeah, to notice yourself, because I mean, I can think of people, I'm sure you can too, who, if they could just see how they're kind of their own worst enemy.
Yeah. Yep.
And sometimes it's just like, wow, I didn't realize that I wasn't using my time properly, or I was not appreciating that I had half an hour, so I could have been more careful. I wouldn't have had to rush through and just. So can you tell me, like, can we take one student, either the paint or contrast those two students, and what was the next stage of those specific students? You know, did they grow from those experiences, or how long did it take them to be able to have advantage from what you're trying to have them have advantage from?
Yeah. So, I mean, everything's in the follow-up, right? So exactly. Giving them that time to reflect, And then as the teacher, understanding where their thoughts were. So, you know, in my classroom, we have sealed journals. We have journals where students can reflect on certain things throughout the week, throughout the months. I tell them that I'm going to be looking at them every once in a while. You know, a lot of teachers have journals that their students are able to kind of like have a communication, which is really, really insightful. And to have students be able to focus on their learning and their thinking in that regard is very beneficial for all involved. Because it's, you know, and it gives, I'm sorry, I'm kind of getting off, you know, as I'm thinking, but it gives you great insights that you can then bring to things like parent conferences and, you know, team meetings that you might have with administrators and, you know, people who may be concerned about students or wanting to hear the success stories of how they're doing in the classroom. But, you know, the next step would be for them to understand that you are processing this as well with them. And the next time they do something, they can kind of put some of those learnings into action. So, you know, if the next thing is, you know, they're writing an essay, how can they help themselves, or how can they figure out what resources they have to get past the planning stages and get to writing, you know, or whatever it might be. And maybe if you have some kind of reflection time with the small groups in the classroom or the whole class, you know, then you can explicitly say to them, you know, look around and see that, you know, you have a whole classroom of friends, classmates, peers that have different strengths. And maybe you can ask someone to help you with something. If you're such a good planner, maybe, you know, you could offer up that strength to someone else. And, you know, if someone else is a go-getter and they're a fast finisher, maybe you can ask them to help you in some way. So there's really, you know, that nice follow through for them to understand that I'm an individual, I've got my own strengths and weaknesses, but I also have an entire classroom that maybe I can tap into what they have to offer me as well.
Yeah. And I could see how maybe kids would, if they felt 100% safe in your classroom, which is something we cannot take for granted.
And No.
I don't remember many classrooms where I felt safe, and I grew up in a much safer time than now.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't that I felt in danger, but I just didn't feel that comfortable thing where I could totally be myself, because that's a level of safety that's really important for a person who's shy or introverted, which I definitely am and was. But as soon as someone like myself and some of my students, that as soon as they do have that level of comfort and feeling that they are seen for who they are, which is what you're bringing to these kids by giving them these wide-ranging opportunities to discover their own strengths, then they can grow in who they are. But I think the question that I wanted to ask you is, even if a child sees, okay, that kid is better at time management, but I still don't feel the confidence to ask.
Yeah.
I have heard that message, that's something that human beings do, is they ask people who have different strengths for help. And so maybe the next time I'm sitting closer to that person or whatever, I don't know, I could just see how that message is so important, even if it doesn't get picked up right away.
And teachers have this unique opportunity to see that and facilitate that. So I can strategically pair those two people up and give them the opportunity to help each other, you know, or I can, you know, it could be as simple if I'm dealing with a student that maybe feels comfortable asking, I can put that idea in their head. I can suggest that to them. So,
yes,
you know, the teacher's role in the classroom is ever changing. And it's becoming just pivotal when it comes to student learning. We can't, like you said, we can't take for granted that students are going to be the go-getters that we hope that they are. And so, I can't overemphasize the importance of the teacher in the classroom right now.
Right. And more as, yes, the role is teacher, but the action is more facilitation so much of the time.
It can be, for sure.
Yeah. But it seems like a lot of that is what you're describing, is facilitating kids, helping themselves grow in their own best strengths. And that isn't something so much, well, you teach it, but you also have to facilitate it. You have to stand back and just put these two together, kind of thing.
Yeah. It's a balance.
It's such a balance. And I guess I just want to bring it back to the real reason you and I both wanted to have this conversation, was to just melt down that concept of the SEL being a boogeyman.
Yeah.
Anything else we want to say, because it crushes both our hearts, I think, that people would think it's anything to be afraid of or worried about.
I talk to hundreds of teachers, you know, whether it's like in person or meetings or Facebook groups or, you know, the comment sections of things and workshops, and just about all the teachers agree. There's always the outliers. There's always the, you know, teachers that are a little, can be a little crazy, but all the teachers agree that SEL needs to be part of the classroom because it's so important right now, and that the most beneficial way to approach this is done, you know, in the moment, becomes part of the classroom routine. It can't just be, you know, one really great lesson, and then the next day, you know, you're starting to see, you know, student misbehaviors again and shutdowns and, you know, the behaviors that you were hoping that activity would help. And it can't be, you know, 6 weeks of scripted activities either. You know, it needs to come from the culture and the atmosphere of the classroom and from the teacher, his or herself.
And the connection that you make, teacher to student and students to students. And that's, I see you as seeing that as your job as well.
Yeah. Connection. Oh, absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. Good. So you have referred a couple of times to SEAL. And if people heard our previous conversation, they would know about that. But I think what I love most about what you bring is that you bring an approach that really, with very little, no unnatural effort, allow teachers to integrate knowledge and SEL and all kinds of interpersonal skills and self-reference. So tell us about that.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. So SEAL stands for Social Emotional Artistic Learning. It's where you take the best of what the arts and creativity have to offer and couple it with the growing needs of social emotional skills in the classroom. And they come together to really just transform your classroom, to help your students and really up your impact. And we do this through three main pillars. So the first one is where that relationship comes into play, and it's cultivating a safe learning environment. This is where, you know, teachers work on, you know, how their classroom is set up and what makes a difference with that, you know, how they present themselves, how they talk to students. You know, these things can be a little touchy sometimes at first, but it's so important for teachers, and myself included. Like, sometimes I'll go back and I'll rewatch parts of my own course and think, oh yeah, I got to remember that, you know, because we all just need these reminders of how we create a safe learning environment.
What do you mean by how we talk to students? Give me an example. Oh,
for example, one thing I would notice about myself, not just other teachers, but even about myself, is I would catch myself trying to correct a student from across the room. And let me tell you, that gets us nowhere. So just the simple act of walking over to the student and having a quick, quiet moment can just, that one thing can make a big difference.
Why do you suppose that is?
Well, I mean, there's the whole, I think there's a social aspect of that, you know, of, you know, if a student's misbehaving and I'm trying to correct them out loud in front of everybody, that's really not helpful. If you're yelling across the room and, you know, calling out is also, you know, how you might look at it. But, you know, the student can get really like self, what's the word? Just kind of like awkward, right? Just wondering what is happening, you know? But when you can go over and get in close proximity to a student, then you are making that known that you want to address this, that you know, and you have to, you know, you have to approach the person in an appropriate way. And that's something too. You can't get into a student's face, but you can get in close proximity. You know, you don't want to be face to face in some cases. You know, you kind of have to turn your body so that you're not invading their space, and using a tone of voice that is quiet, calm, certainly calm, and respectful, and helping them to see that, you know, listen, I know that you kind of got a little out of hand. I need you to pull it back a little bit. What can I do to help you? Are you going to be okay? Like, you know, just that kind of a thing. So understanding that, that's part of that first pillar where you just need to cultivate that safe learning environment. Beautiful. To begin with. And I kind of liken it to those bottom parts, the foundational layers of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, mm-hmm. so that the students can feel safe coming into your classroom. And then the second one is about getting your students invested in their learning. And that comes from the different SEAL methods that we have. You know, there are daily SEAL strategies that, you know, just become part of your classroom routine. There are SEAL activities that teachers use on a consistent basis, weekly or monthly, that really just help to build relationships peer to peer and kind of help them to understand themselves as learners as well, and help them to really build some of the capabilities to be present in the classroom. And then of course there's full out lessons that help them to develop specific skills through the arts, which brings me to the third pillar, which is allowing teachers the flexibility to do what they know is going to work for their students. And why I truly believe that the teacher is the most important part of each and every classroom. And they have to be empowered and given the autonomy to have, you know, to be the creative professional that they are, and to understand their students, and then have that flexibility to do what they know is going to work for their students. So if they have a group of students who are, you know, fine individually, but they are awful at working together, why would you spend the time on self, you know, self-actualization and understanding yourself when what the teacher should be able to do is pull from some, in our case, SEAL lessons that are targeting those skills where they can work together and build those skills within the classroom. So those are the three real pillars to, I feel, creating an amazing classroom environment where this teacher can really just make a difference every day.
What I get from that description of yours truly is that the teacher at the end of the day is not drained because it was a mutually kind of satisfying and elevating without being touchy-feely, but it's just like people got energy instead of drained and were fighting their own energies, but were not quite saying it the right way. But I just feel like the teacher does not get drained by what you're talking about.
Yeah, we call that the daily teacher drain.
Yeah,
because that is...
It doesn't have to be that way.
It's real, yeah. And these are the types of strategies and just mindset shifts that can really help a teacher to defeat the daily teacher drain. One teacher, one of the first people to go through and really and become an official SEAL teacher, she said, you know, these are the strategies that help me get through even the toughest days, because there are going to be tough days, and they're all coming from the mindset work within SEAL. It's just so important. You know, a big part of this is, you know, helping the teacher to understand their role in the classroom. Mm-hmm. And empowering them with, you know, the ideas that this is the type of experience and work that can really help their students. And when you can, you know, have a classroom of students that really feel safe and heard, they will to the plate.
It's everything.
Yeah.
Absolutely everything. Once I got that as a teacher, I came home energized rather than exhausted at each day. And that's all I ever wanted when I was a student.
Right.
Well, even as a grown-up.
Yeah. I know, right?
Right.
Our workplaces can drain us or elevate us.
Yeah. So it's you're not talking about anything foreign. And just to contrast again, because I'm going to title this episode something like what SEL is and what it is not.
Yes.
So I just want to make sure that we are very clear that there are some people promoting things that are awkward, unnatural, irrelevant to real life for students and for families and for individuals' values.
Mm-hmm.
But what you're emphasizing is something that is just relevant, is useful, is makes life better for everybody in the classroom, out of the classroom, with the family, in life as you go forward. Yeah. So that's my take.
So many benefits. That's all.
Do you want to add anything to that? Because I just think that's why we're really here for this conversation.
But yeah, I mean, when you think about the impact that can occur just from the classroom, it's like, how pretty much everyone hopefully has that one teacher that really, you know, made that impact on them, really made a difference to them for whatever reason. You know, I have a couple just for like this little thing here and this little thing here. And, you know, wouldn't it be amazing for teachers to just know that, you know, 10, 20 years down the road, when they bump into a former student in the grocery store, you know, they may get that story or that hug or that smile, and you're like, huh, I did make a difference. You know, that's like the best feeling ever.
The best. The best. I know. Mm-hmm. I've had it, and there's nothing better. And it happens by making those connections that are two-way. It's not just I know what's better for you. It's like, what do you need, and what can I give you, and what can you all give each other, and how can we be in this together, and just everything you've described, and the fact that you're offering tools that do not add more work. It seems I haven't done your program because I'm not in the classrooms anymore, but everything I've seen that you offer does not add work. It just supports teachers, support students.
And I think that's so important.
It's essential.
It really is. Because
teachers,
when you come right down to it, teachers need to teach.
Yeah.
Right. And right. We need to teach our content, and we need to teach our curriculum.
Yeah.
But However, none of that can really be done effectively. I mean, we can do it, but it might not be as effective,
right,
as if we equip ourselves with the right mindset and the methods to really support that learning. And like we've both said a couple of times already, doing that in isolation is not going to work long term. It might work in the moment,
yeah,
but that moment goes,
right,
and it's not going to work for everybody in that moment, right? So the isolation is not the answer, but the integration into what teachers do every single day is the most important thing.
Yeah, yeah. That consistency that kids can walk into that room and know how it's going to be, that they're going to feel respected, that they're going to find out, they're going to get to be enlivened by what happens in the classroom, not punched into a box or a shirt. What age groups are we talking about? Just in your direct experience, or what your SEAL offers for what age groups?
Yeah, well, I mean, personally, I truly believe it's pre-K through 12.
Great.
And great. I think that SEL is needed pre-K through 12. I've had teachers come through the program, the course, from pre-K, like teaching 3 and 5, 3 and 4 year olds, all the way through high school. And there just is something for everybody. And I think that that speaks to the power of the arts.
Yes.
Because the arts are so naturally differentiated. So once you learn these strategies, you can bring yourself to the art form wherever you are, and then it's also going to push you forward. And when you bring that to your students, it's the same thing. So you can, you know, a third grade teacher and an eighth grade teacher can bring the same activity to the classroom, probably different materials, probably different directions, you know, but the same basic activity. And that's something that we talk a lot about, the adaptations and the modifications for different ages inside the course. But then right there, the art form and the idea of the lesson hits the student where they're at, and then also pushes them forward. So it's like just the ultimate in learning. It's just really, I'm always so amazed at how the arts can be so, so powerful in the classroom. And any teacher who's tried it would agree. I 100% believe that any teacher who's really tried to bring some creativity into the classroom has seen those sparks of, you know, joy in learning, and the students get invested in their learning.
Nothing says it better than that, that brings a spark of joy in learning. Nothing says it better than that. That's a teacher's job well done. And that's the teacher's joy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That helps defeat the daily teacher drain.
Exactly. But I just love what you're bringing, Elizabeth. Thank you.
Thank you, Nini.
If there anything else, did we cover it?
Oh, man, I think so. Yeah. I think putting an emphasis on the teacher is really where schools need to go next. Instead of the program, the new initiative, we really need to put the focus on the teacher.
It went away again.
Oh, sorry.
Darn it. It's a good one too. Oh, I know. Okay. Came back. Like some schools are cutting arts and from the budget, but this is how to get arts into the budget into the classroom without having it be in the budget. Is this true or not?
Not exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. And this is another great conversation to have if you ever want to have it again. But
okay, I do.
In a nutshell, you know, true arts integration is taking the skills that students are learning in their classes, in their arts classes, and helping the curriculum as well. So to the ideal is to have students learning the artistic skills in their arts classes, and then also being able to integrate those skills into the other content that they may be learning. And so we don't want to lose sight of learning the arts for the art's sake, but we certainly can see the benefit of utilizing those artistic skills and that creative expression into the other content areas, and vice versa. You know, when I was teaching music, I taught music to middle schoolers for about 7 years, and I would bring language skills into the music room, you know, so the integrated learning should be happening, you know, both ways and all the time. you know, bringing math into your PE class and helping students, you know, as they're moving to understand, you know, number patterns and skills like that. I mean, there's so many ways to integrate the arts with the learning.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think the reason that I brought that up, and I'm really glad I did remember it just a day, was that I know that you say that teachers do not have to have specifically any confidence in their own artistic skills.
Yes.
Still get benefit from this approach.
Yes.
That's why I brought it up. So maybe just tuck on that a bit before we finish up.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point to make right now, because a lot of teachers might shy away from the idea of arts integration or bringing creativity into their classroom because, you know, they don't see themselves as a creative being. But we all are creative beings, first of all. We all have our own unique ways of being creative. It doesn't have to be in a sculpture or in a song or in dance moves on the dance floor. It can be in cooking. It can be in how you think. It can be in how you tell stories. There's so many ways to be creative. But that shouldn't, you know, you also want to make sure you present opportunities for your students to utilize some of those different art forms in their learning. Because, you know, you don't want to take that away from them because of the limitation you feel you have. Yeah. So, for example, I'm no visual artist, right? I'm a stick figure girl all the way. When I draw out word problems on the board, my kids laugh, and I laugh too, because it's pretty bad.
Wonderful.
But, you know, why would I take that away from my students? You know, why would I let that limitation of me not being able to really do a good drawing, why would I let them not have the opportunity to add an illustration to their math work, or, you know, doodle on their notes pages in science when I know that that's going to help them? I want to encourage that. And maybe they can give me some pointers. I've had some students try and give me some pointers.
Wonderful, which is always such a fabulous dynamic to add to the students teach us.
Yeah.
Oh God, that creates some energy, and it's wonderful in itself. Oh, that's so beautiful. Yeah, I hate to end conversations with you, Elizabeth, because there's always new paths to take, because, well, being a teacher is the greatest opportunity to be a lifelong learner too, obviously.
Oh, yes, that is true. That is very true. And we as teachers need to remember that and seek out those opportunities to really learn and grow, and ask our administrators to help us to get those opportunities. The sometimes the professional development that we're given isn't really what we need. And, you know, to be able to have a little bit of freedom to go out and search for the development that you think you need and that you want, that's just going to fuel your own fire for teaching. Yeah. So it's something that I think teachers need to really start voicing the fact.
Self-advocating.
Advocating, yeah, for themselves.
Yeah.
To be able to invest in themselves as teachers, because if we don't, that'll just be another way that we can burn out.
And lose more teachers. And what is the effect of that for all of us?
It'll be horrible. It's horrible.
Yes. Yeah. We need an educated society. We need a country that is growing in all of these essential humanity, mm-hmm. social skills, artistic, creative, just not, yeah. It's yeah. got to keep growing or it's going to be shrinking. So mm-hmm. that's why I appreciate you so much.
Oh, thank you, Nini. Thank you for having me on this to be able to really talk about some of these topics in depth. Very, very important right now.
Very, very, very important. Good. Okay, so you're going to give me some links and I have some of your links, but send them to me right away and I'll be sure to put them on there. And if you think of anything else or if you want to have another conversation, you know I'm up for it.
Okay, sounds wonderful. Thank you, Nini.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
So there you have it. Whether you're a wholehearted advocate of social emotional learning, always on the lookout for more creative ways to integrate SEL into your classroom's culture, or if maybe you're on the other side of the SEL spectrum and you've been swayed by the disparaging remarks some groups have been promoting for whatever reasons they are doing that, I trust that you've gained some value from this level-headed conversation with Elizabeth Peterson, based upon her years of direct experience teaching and guiding other teachers with her uncomplicated approaches, which are 100% relevant to student subject matter. Bottom line, SEL in the classroom is about creating the healthiest learning environments, equally for students and for teachers, thus for the community at large, both short and long term. Check out www.theinspiredclassroom.com if you'd like to learn more about what Elizabeth brings. Meantime, we have more enriching conversations with other educators lined up, so please do subscribe to this podcast if you haven't already. Also, if you have any suggestions for topics you'd like us to explore on the podcast, please drop us a line. We are here for you, just like you're there for your students. Okay, until next time.